Hi, family. My name is Eric, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Eric.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't thank God with an attitude of gratitude for his grace and his mercy, because I know that that's how I got here. I was asked to speak on the topics of steps 1, 2, and 3, and I'm going to do that for you today here. I just need to let you know that I'm not the star of the show here, you know, and I'm not up here on image time. You know, for me, it's about what the literature says. My gratitude speaks when I care and share with others the NA way. And that's exactly how I live today, because I live by the roadmap, which is the basic text, and everything that's in it from cover to cover. Steps 1, 2, and 3 is I found out that in recovery, there's a lot of threes, and the threes that are in recovery are essential to my life. I'm talking about understanding my ideas, my attitudes and behaviors. I'm talking about the triangle of self-obsession, fear, resentment, and anger. You know, all of these things are prevalent to me in my process of recovery. You know, and recovery itself, you know, there's the program, which is the literature, which always works. There's also the fellowship, what we do when we come together in our meeting places. And then there's the process, what we actually do, you know, in the rooms, because I truly understand that as addicts in this process with the disease being so cunning and baffling, that we have the ability to come into the rooms with Narcotics Anonymous and loiter with the intent to recover. You know, Narcotics Anonymous is an action program, you know, and I need to make very sure that I'm not sitting in the rooms waiting for my ship to come in. I need to jump in the water and swim out to meet it. And that's what I was taught when I got here. A little bit about me. I'm originally from Newark, New Jersey. My clean date is February 10th, 2003. And I say that not to be, you know, prestigious, because from what I've been taught, you know, it takes 5 years for you to get, you know, some of your brain cells back, and then it takes another 5 years for you to learn how to use them. So, you know, there's nothing for me to be, you know, profound about here in my clean time, you know. So I just want to say that for the newcomer that, you know, if there is any in attendance, that, you know, the program does work, you know, and I'm a living miracle and a witness to the fact that the program works. I came to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I was hostile. I was aggressive. I was confrontational. And above all, I was institutionalized, because as a direct result of my disease of addiction, I had the esteemed pleasure of visiting every prison in the state of New Jersey. And I'll say that again, you know, because some people might think I'm kind of embellishing a little bit, but I said every prison in the state of New Jersey. And that's where I happened to hit my bottom at. That's where my surrender came. You know, I wasn't homeless. That's not a part of my story. I wasn't eating out of dumpsters. That's not a part of my story. You know, for me, I kept repeating the same thing over and over, expecting different results, and the result was the same. I'd end up with a door slamming, which was the cell door, and I'd be sitting there on that bunk, and I'd say to myself something that sounds a lot like one of the chapters in our book. Damn, why am I here again? You know, and it didn't dawn on me for a long time that, you know, my being in that situation was a direct result of my act of addiction. That's how cunning and baffling the disease was. It wasn't that, you know, I was doing things that were dictated by the destructive force that was in my life. It was that, you know, in my head, and my disease would tell me the reason why I kept going there is because when I had that TV on my shoulder, I made a right turn instead of a left, you know, so the cops caught me, you know what I'm saying? It never, you know, came to light, you know. It was a direct result of my behaviors in using it. So, you know, and how I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, that's why when they talk about gratitude lists for me, right at the top of my gratitude list is the New Jersey State Department of Corrections. And reason being is that I remember being paroled from prison, and they said, Eric, you can't parole to the streets. And I was like, why can't I? You know, and they was like, well, you know, all of your charges are directly related to drugs in one form or another. So our administrative direction to me was that I'd be paroled to a 12-step halfway house that had a Narcotics Anonymous base. And that was my introduction to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Needless to say, at that particular time, when they did that, I wasn't ready. So, but, you know, I was an addict. I was institutionalized. Manipulation was a very valuable asset for me at the time. So, you know, to be out of prison, you know, and not have to, well, I'm going to get real honest, not have to be able to not see women, I said, well, I'm going to go to this place, because that was one of the things that was on my agenda at the time. So I went there, and I manipulated that program for 1 year. I was mandated there for 18 months. I manipulated it for 1 year and got my parole papers. The minute I got my parole papers, I did what I always do, and I got what I always got. I ended up in prison in a whole nother state, you know what I mean? Because I said, well, you know, the geographical change thing. Well, I'm going to leave New Jersey, and I'm going to go here, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. But needless to say, I had no idea that everywhere I go, there I was. You know, so the same thing started to repeat themselves in a new state. And got to the point of surrender in Buffalo, New York. I was in prison, and the charge that had led me to be in prison was actually a theft charge, but in the process of the theft, somebody got in my way, and I just, like, bowled over this person, and the person happened to be an elderly lady. And she got hurt in the process, and while I was sitting behind bars, my lawyer came to see me one day, and he said, well, I got some bad news for you. And I was like, you know, what can be worse than being in jail? He said, the lady you ran over died. Now, I'm faced with whether or not the charge is going to be changed. You know what I'm saying? Because being that I was involved in it, the charge could have been changed to some sort of murder or something that was involved with murder. And at the time, you know, I was in my mid to late early upper 40s at the time. And I started calculating up what kind of time would be involved with that, you know, and I was like, you know, I can't do this. I've been here too much. This is the same thing over and over again. And that year that I spent in that 12-step halfway house, we had the get slip sign, make meetings, or you were on restriction, and this, that, and the other, which I manipulated all that stuff. But sitting in the room for those times, some seeds were planted. You know, I didn't know it at the time because, you know, surrendering to the fact that I was an addict, you know, was not on my agenda at that particular time, but the seeds were planted at that time. And I started to begin to say to myself, you know, like, I can't do this no more. When this thing, how could it go that way? How could the script flip like that? Well, anyway, they found out in the process of all that investigation that, you know, the injuries the lady sustained when I ran her over had nothing to do with her death. She had a terminal illness. So that was God's grace and mercy as far as I'm concerned, and that was a real, real moment of clarity on how close I was to just canceling my whole life and giving it up to the system. So I said that I really need to do something different. So I left that state, and I went back to the state that I came from, which was New Jersey. And there was a guy that I used with, and he rolled up on me. He was shining, he had a new car, and, you know, his whole demeanor. And that's what the literature talks about when it says it's about attraction rather than promotion. You know, I was attracted to what was going on in his life. I wanted to know what it was because I know how he used. He used just like I used. And there was something different, and I asked him, I said, what are you doing? And he said, Narcotics Anonymous. I was like, come on, man, tell me the truth. What are you doing? He said, Narcotics Anonymous. He said, you ain't ready to hear that now. But one thing he did was, he said, when the pain gets great enough, He said, I can't talk to you because I wasn't using it at the time, but I was in the midst of the lifestyle. And he didn't want to be there. So he said, this is my phone number. He said, when the pain gets great enough, give me a call. A couple weeks later, the pain was great enough, and I gave him a call. And that was February 10th of 2003. And he drove all the way from Altoona, Pennsylvania, to Newark, New Jersey. He picked me up. We got on the highway, and we started coming back. And at the time, I was grooving. And he looked over at me, and he smiled. And he said, it's all over now. You know what I mean? And that's where the first step comes in. The first step, you know, talks about we came to believe that power greater than ourselves. That's the second step. We admitted that we were addicts. And in the first step, you know, I had to first admit that I was an addict before I could even begin to address the problem. And that's what I did when I called them up and I asked for the help. And, you know, the first step talks about powerlessness. The principles that I got from my first step was acceptance, honesty, and surrender. And for me, you know, like the honesty was a process. I mean, I had to get to the point where it was not so much about being honest with other people. It was about being honest with myself. Because, you know, like I have the ability to come into the program and manipulate the words in the steps, you know, or either try to make it the way I want to, you know what I'm saying? But in the literature, it says that we don't have to understand how this program works in order for it to work in our lives. All we have to do is be able to follow directions. So, you know, I followed directions that was given to me, and I started to understand that the powerlessness was that, you know, once I start, I can't stop. I have no control over it once I put it in, you know, and I had to surrender to that. And I can remember being in treatment, you know, when I was in a treatment facility. I can remember at about 6 months clean, you know, I started to go through this major depression. It was feeling like, you know, there was something wrong and something like maybe somebody had died or something, but hadn't nobody died. What was beginning to come crystal clear and apparent to me was that my best friend, my comfort zone, my solution for everything was gone. Because my solution was, no matter what situation or circumstance I was in or how it went down, the solution was always, well, I'll get one. You know, and everything's going to be better after I get one. And I found out that was gone. And I went through this like mini depression about it, and the rehab I was in at the time suggested that, you know, like I write a divorce letter to my disease and, you know, do all that stuff that, you know, rehab's doing, burn it and this, that, and the other, which worked for me. You know, it seemed to work for me. And I became to understand about the powerlessness of the disease and that the surrender that I did that first time to the fact that I was an addict and I can't use no matter what. Because, like, recovery at this point has become, for me, about reality, discovery, and understanding. And the reality for me in the first step is just that I'm an addict and I can't use no matter what. I don't care if the relationship goes, the family don't want to answer the phone, they still think that I'm the same person that I was before. You know what I'm saying? I can't use no matter what. There's no justifiable reason for me to use because when I use, you know, I can't stop. There's a series of events that happen once I put it in, you know, that always land me back in the same place. And the first step started to take hold to me. I decided and came to the point that, you know, using was not an option for me anymore. Not a feasible option, not a safe option if I wanted to live life or anything near a life. I couldn't use. And I went through that, and I got that from my first step. And then I had to move on, and the second step for me was kind of hard because, like, I came to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous institutionalized, and I spent a lot of time behind bars. And in the state of New Jersey, when I go behind a prison wall, people know who I am because I was a rebel rouser. I didn't mind doing all those things that you see on the TV shows about jail because, you know, was about me, you know, and I had to do this all on my own, you know. So I had the attitude that, you know, by any means necessary, I was going to protect myself. And the second step says that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And the reason why I had trouble with that step was because of that word sanity. You know, that word sanity being in there kind of suggests to me that I was insane. And I didn't want to admit to no shit like that, being insane. I didn't want to admit because I was a legend in my own mind. You know what I'm saying? I had it going on. You know what I'm saying? I was so accustomed to jailing that I could go behind the walls, you know, or get locked up and not have no money in my pocket, no commissary, no sweatsuit, no shower shoes, no any of that stuff. And I had ways and means and behaviors from having been behind bars so long that I could come up, you know, to like having all the cereal and all of the magazines and all this. I knew how to jail, you know. So I had this thing in my head about, you know, like I was the slickest thing since Vaseline. You know what I'm saying? I had it going on. So this step is not going to work with me. There's nothing insane about me. Needless to say, having some open-mindedness, and that's what the principle of the second step for me is, open-mindedness. And, you know, having some open-mindedness, you know, I begin to share that with some of the people that were in my support group, and one of them real basic, fundamental, intelligent addicts pulled me to the side, and he said, you know, like, I care about you, and I don't want you to get this thing twisted. He said, you seem to be having a little trouble with the second step. He said, so let me ask you a question. I said, yeah. I said, I ain't nothing insane about me. You know what I'm saying? So he asked me a couple of questions. He said, well, are you a scientist? I said, what the hell are you talking about? I ain't no scientist. He said, well, let me switch that up. Are you a pharmacist? I said, do you see me in a white coat? I ain't no pharmacist. He said, how about a biologist? Are you a biologist? I was like, man, what are you getting at? He said, well, you bought your bags one bag at a time and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, how the hell did you know what was in the bag? He said, did you do tests on it to find out whether it was strychnine, rat poison, battery acid, or whatever? I said, no, you ain't do no tests on it. You smell it. You know what I'm saying? And he was like, well, did you use, you know, like multiple times, you know, you used intravenously? I was like, yeah, I used intravenously. You know all that. You heard my story. What are you getting at? He said, don't you think it's slightly insane that you place yourself in the position of a guinea pig 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by shooting something in your arm that you don't know what it is and that could possibly kill you? You know what I'm saying? I sat there and I had a moment of clarity and thought about it. And I remember back in New York, they had this stuff that was called Pango and Cash. And everybody that used it died. And God's grace and mercy, at the time that this stuff was on the street, he had me behind bars at the time. So I wasn't able to get any of this stuff, or else I probably would have been dead too. And the insanity part was, while I was sitting in that jail cell and I was watching the news on the TV and they said, yeah, Tango and Cash, it's killing people, it's 100% pure and all this and all that. And I'm sitting there saying, damn, they don't know how to do it right. You got to split that in half and do, you know, and I'm rationalizing, you know, I want what they told me seven people just died off of. Is that insanity or not? You know, and that's exactly where my head was. And I started to get in touch with all this stuff, and I calmed down and started to begin to do work in the second step, because I identified with that one word was trapping me up, the insanity part in it. You know, and once I was given that help with some clarity on the type of insanity, because the only insanity that I had known up to that point was like Jack Nicholson, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That kind of insanity I wasn't working with. You know what I'm saying? I was working with the insanity that, you know, I was willing willing, with a big willingness and vigilant in placing myself in situations and circumstances that were unhealthy for a human being to live in. So I got in touch with that and to move further into the second step. And one thing that, you know, like my sponsor is really about the literature, and I thank God for my sponsor, because like I recognized with the second step that I really, really just didn't need to go over any one of these steps with a minimum of concern, because we're talking about the very thing that gives me the blanket of freedom to which I live under today, you know. And my sponsor is very acute on his observations and is doing step work. You know, we sit down and we got to break bread for a minute. It's not just read over it, give me your answers, you did good, live it for a week and move on to the next step. You know what I'm saying? We go at it. We have it's back and forth. You know, and sponsorship is a two-way street, and I really understand that through the sponsor that I have. You know, and one of the things that I got in touch with in the second step was that the second step was not about God. A lot of people get that confused and think that they're talking about the power greater than yourself is God, but that's not what the second step talks about. The second step is about a power greater than yourself. All of you addicts sitting in this amphitheater right now is a power greater than me. You know, the literature is a power greater than me. My sponsor is a power greater than me. I'm talking about in the forms of finding some direction, because, you know, the good orderly direction that needs to be given to any addict coming into the process of recovery, so that we don't have to lean on our own understanding when it comes to doing this step work. You know, like I said, I have the ability to manipulate the step work in the literature so that it could fit me or the way that I want to be. And the same way that it works for me, it works for him, and it works for him. You know what I'm saying? It's the same program. You know what I'm saying? It's just that we have to get to it somehow in different ways. You know, the guy spoke last night, said, you know, it's no one specific way that this process works, you know, for everybody. You know what I'm saying? He can't recover for me and I can't recover for him. The way he did it may not be the way that I particularly did it or I learned it. But the end result is the same. And that's what I'm totally in touch with. So the power greater than myself, you know, had to become the literature, meetings, sponsorship, the most valuable weapon in the process of recovery, another recovering addict. You know what I'm saying? I had to allow someone to be able to guide me and direct me in this. And I needed extreme guidance, you know what I'm saying? Because my process of thinking, you know, was way off the Richter scale. So I had to stop doing all this thinking for myself, and I had to allow somebody else to know where I was at in my head and then share some stuff with me about how it works, because I had no identification on putting myself in harm's way. You know what I'm saying? I used to think that some of my ideas were the brightest thing since sliced bread. You know what I'm saying? And then I would go to my support group and share my idea with them, and they would look me right in the face and say, "You're extremely out of your mind." And then they would tell me why. Just like and 4.5 years later, you know, I still get that. You know what I'm saying? Today, you know what I'm saying? My decisions are based on whatever principle that I use and that I've learned from the step work. That's how I make my decisions. And when I do make my decisions, before I act on my decisions, I go to the most valuable weapon, which is another recovering addict. You know what I'm saying? Because I know that I don't consistently have the ability to make healthy decisions for myself. So I need to go to someone else who's living the same lifestyle that I'm living and living by the same program that I'm living, just to make sure, you know. And I happen to live right next to a bar, and I've been living there for 3 years, and the guy that owns the bar, he sees me go and come to work, he sees me come home, change my clothes, and and go back out with my basic text, it works out and watch that working God in my hand, and go do what I do. And basically what he sees is a nice gentleman, you know what I'm saying, kind of big in size and stuff like that, and he's thinking from the standpoint of his business. So he addresses me and he says, would you like a job? And I'm like, jobs are good, you know what I'm saying? And he says, I would pay you $40 a night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I said, well, what's the gig? He says, I want you to check IDs on my door, you know, and make sure everybody's of adult age that comes in this bar. And I'm like saying to myself, and I'm talking about the second step, that sanity part. I said to myself, wow, you know, like I got wreckage of the past, $40, 5 nights. I start calculating it up, and I was like, wow, this sounds good. Because in order to get to his place, my door is here, his door is here. You know what I'm saying? Wow, I wouldn't have to travel nowhere or spend nothing. I could walk there and come back, and while I'm working, I could run upstairs and use my own bathroom. This is great, you know? So I take it to my support group. You know, and I'm like, yeah, you know, he wants me to. They said, one of the other threes. They said, well, what about people, places, and things? Oh, man, this is a job. Here I go with rationalization. You know, it's a job. You know, I'm just going to be standing in the door. I'm not going to be all the way in the bar. I'm going to be just standing at the door checking IDs and whatnot. And 90% of them told me I was crazy. And they gave me situations and circumstances to reflect that, you know, like you're going to be in an establishment that is suggested that we don't go into, you know, if we're addicts in the process of recovery. You're going to be in there and 100% of the people are going to be under the influence of some mood mind altering chemical, and you don't think that your disease has the ability to show up in that situation. And I thought about it, so I was like, my sponsor knows that, you know, like I need to clear some wreckage in my past from a monetary perspective. So he's going to be down with this. He understands. He knows. My sponsor pulls up. I get in the car. I said, oh, man, I got some stuff I want to talk to you about. And Cedric knows my sponsor real well. You know, I said, I got some stuff I want to talk to you about, man. You know, the financial stuff I've been having. And my sponsor, he's a kind of stout, short guy. And he sits there and he does this. Because he knows he's getting ready to get hit in the head with some bullshit. So I'm telling him what's going on. I said, yeah, this guy right here. Yeah, that's him right there. We're sitting in front of my apartment in the car. I said, that's him right there. And, you know, he wants to offer me a job. You know I need the money, so I'm trying to pull him on my side. You know I need the money so I can pay this. You know, I got plans and everything for it. And he's sitting there and he's steady blowing. I said, yeah, he wants me to be a bouncer and check IDs on the door. He stopped blowing. He looked over at me. He was like, get out my car. You know, that was his response to me. Get out my car. And I understood clearly, you know what I'm saying, that all that good shit I said didn't make him deviate from the fact of the basics. And my sponsor taught me if I stay rooted in the basics, I'll never have to return to him. And the basics in that situation was stay away from people, places, and things that you use with or at. You know what I'm saying? No dressing, no icing, just that simple, you know? And that's exactly what I did. I took that, and this guy today still asked me, you know, about working in there. But I've learned in the time that I've been in Narcotics Anonymous that no is a complete sentence. I can put a period after that when I say it. And, you know, so I got in touch with, you know, all the powers that are greater than myself, sponsorship, the literature, the meetings, another recovering addict, and I understood that, you know, and the part in there about, you know, understanding what the powers greater than myself was, you know, helped me immensely, and I was told to move on. And now I'm talking about the third step, where we made a decision to turn our will and the care of our lives over to the God of our understanding. You know, this was the most important decision that I made in my process of recovery. I don't know about anybody else, but for me, and it was a bit of a hard process because by this time, you know, the reality of the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I had tangible evidence that people were getting better in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and that all the credit was due to, you know, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, manifesting themselves in the people's life because they practiced, big word, they practiced this stuff in all their affairs. And, you know, I got honest with myself, and, you know, I had this conception in my head, you know, with all the time that I spent behind prison bars, that all the things that I'd done to my family, to my friends, all the times that, you know, I went in stores robbing them, I stole, and all the greasy stuff that I did. You know, honestly, you know, my mother and father were devout Christian people, and I knew what church was. I knew what the concept of God was. And from my understanding, you know, I didn't think God wanted nothing to do with me. You know, nothing to do with me. And making the decision, you know, was a process for me, because I first had to get over the fact that, you know, I had it in my head that God didn't want nothing to do with me. So I really needed some help, and I really needed some direction on understanding that, you know, God is a loving and caring God, and it describes that in our literature, and says that that's the only suggestion that they make on you choosing a God of your understanding, that he'd be loving and caring. And once I got the understanding of that, I made the decision that in spite of all that I thought about myself and possibly having a relationship with the God of my understanding, you know, that I was going, you know, move forward with that decision. And when I made that decision, it relieved me of so much stress, because, you know, and I say again, thank God for sponsorship and the clarity that it gives me, is that not only do, you know, I just make the decision to turn my will and my life over and all this stuff's going to happen, you know what I'm saying, the God of my understanding, I have to participate. You know what I'm saying? I definitely have to participate in anything that I ask my God for, anything that I want my God to do in my life. There's a certain amount of participation that's required of me. And I'm talking about those spiritual principles being practiced in my life. The literature talks about God's true will. What's God's will? You know, I've seen people go all kind of directions on that in the time that I've been in this fellowship. Some people get on a religious zeal where they want to put on a potato sack and sandals and go walk out in the desert for 40 days. If that's their process, you know, that's their process, looking for, you know, God's will. But, you know, I follow the basic text in the literature, and it says that simplicity is the key. And the simple process that I put, you know, God's will in my life, because that could keep you tied up forever trying to really, truly understand what God's will is, you know, and I had to keep it simple. God's will for me is not to harm myself, not to harm another human being, or walk around with a heart with malicious intent in it. And that's as simple as I keep it for me. I don't walk around judging people or being aggressive and confrontational no more. Above all, I don't hurt myself, and I will not hurt another human being. And my mother used to say something to me, if you don't have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. You know, and so many of the teachings that my mother and father had tried to give me back then are so prevalent and true in my life today, the way I live, you know, through the 12 steps and the spiritual principles in my life, practicing them every day. And another thing that making the decision to turn my life and the care of my will over to the God of my understanding was that I no longer had to be in control. I got out the driver's seat, and I let God do what God's going to do, you know, and spiritual principles of my third step that's prevalent is patience. You know, I found out that in order for my third step to manifest itself in my life, you know, I have to have the spiritual principle of patience, because God does not do what I want him to do. He does not bless me when I want to be blessed. You know what I'm saying? He does it in his time. You know, and 90% of the time, he makes me practice some principles, you know, before the blessing is bestowed. humility. You know what I'm saying? He's not going to give me nothing if I'm running around here arrogant and I got this idea in my head that I'm deserving of some stuff. Or that, you know, I've got to a point where I arrived somewhere and I deserve this. And one of the things about the God of my understanding, he was a very, very humble man. You know what I'm saying? A very humble man. So, you know, I need to retain a certain amount of humility in my process, in my walk on a daily basis, so that God can do what he needs to do for me. And I have to be able to practice some patience because I'm an addict. You know, I come from the school, I want what I want. Now, I'm not talking about now, right now. Give it to me now. I need it right now. You know what I'm saying? And I had to go through a process with that man because, you know, for me it was like I wasn't willing to wait for nothing. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't have the patience to wait on God. So what did I do? You know, I wanted to kind of give him a little hand, a little help. I wanted to put my hands in the process. But I learned, and my experience has been that when I sit back, and I pray, and I wait on God, and I pray some more, and I wait on God, and I remain humble, and I wait on God, and I keep doing what I need to do in spite of the stuff that I want to do, you know what I'm saying? And I need to say, as a result of this program today, you know, most of the things that I want to do are positive things, are things that would enhance the quality of my life or either enhance, you know, the integrity of my character today, you know, because... You know, I recognize through step work that I not only came in here, you know, with a severe drug addiction. I came over here, I came to the fellowship suffering from severe assholism outside of being an addict. I'm talking about always wanting to be aggressive, always wanting to say the shock value thing to you, always with that institutionalization. I want to test your chin and see how far I can go with you. You know what I'm saying? I want to call you outside the box and see what your reaction is going to be. And then if your reaction wasn't one as strong as mine, you were suspect. You would be manipulated, you know, and that's how I lived. And I don't live like that no more. And my third step has really, really, right now in my process of recovery, you know, God has been showing up for me so much. It's like phenomenal, phenomenal. I'm telling you, like just a short couple of years ago, man, I came here, man, you know, I was broke, busted, disgusted, couldn't be trusted. I have people that will call me up and say, hey, I'm going, you know, out of town. I'm going to visit my family for a week. I want you to do me a favor. I'm going to drop off the keys to my apartment. I want you to stop by and, you know, like feed the cat and water the plants for me. You know, and I'm like, me? People are trusting me today? And that's a result of not what I say, but what I do. You know, and I found out, you know, through sponsorship, the measure of a man and a woman is not what they say or what they have, but more so in how they live and how they walk. You know, based on attraction rather than promotion, man. You know what I'm saying? People see things in me that I don't see in myself all the time because the disease we suffer from, it's so cunning, baffling, insidious that I could wake up one morning after going to work, putting in a good, honest 40 hours of work, and, you know, it's the weekend, and I wake up, and I'm going to cook me some breakfast, and the first thing my disease will say to me after prayer and after reading my Just for the Day in the morning, because that's my daily ritual, is that you ain't shit. You're still an addict, and you'll never be nothing. My disease still wants to keep me in there, you know what I'm saying? But I have to, you know, continue to follow what the program has taught me, you know what I'm saying? And those are the times I need to take an honest appraisal and look at my fourth step at the assets that I had lined up in my fourth step, you know, and bank on those and live on those. And one of the most important things that I bring to my process of recovery is a positive attitude, because I found out and I've learned that you go where your focus is. If I'm focused on negativity, that's exactly what I'm going to get. If I come to a meeting with a negative attitude, what I'm going to hear in that meeting is negativity. If I come to that meeting with a positive attitude, I'm going to reap all the positive rewards of what was shared in that meeting. So I keep a positive attitude, man, because this is a positive program, and I no longer have the ability to walk around looking at the glass as half empty. The glass is half full for me, because... You know, the sky's the limit. Anything's possible. The only promise is freedom from active addiction. But there's many other blessings that come with the application of this program in your life. And I'm starting to see tangible evidence of the other rewards. I've had various jobs in my process of recovery, and I've been doing things like the program taught me to do. You know, do things for the right reason, the right way, and the next right thing. I left one job and went to the other, and when I got ready to do that, my employer said to me, if you ever need to come back, you know what I'm saying, you're welcome to come back here. And that's because of the principles that this program has taught me about commitment, about service, about honesty and whatnot. You know, and the 12 steps says we practice these principles in all our affairs. And I don't know about nobody else, the real recovery for me goes on when I walk outside of the doors of Narcotics Anonymous. In the rooms, that's a safe haven for me. You know, I know the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous is a safe haven. You know, that's where I do my second step at, my physical second step. I go to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, the meetings, to get restored to sanity on a daily basis. And I need to be restored to sanity on a daily basis because I've learned that repetition strengthens and confirms. I might go to 5 meetings in the course of the week and every one of them be on acceptance or gratitude. I need to hear that, you know what I'm saying, on a consistent basis, because my recovery it was told to me that I need to apply the same vigilance in my process of recovery that I did when I was using. And I do that today, you know what I'm saying? I use the same way every day, all day, as much as I could, the same way I did. And a lot of times, you know, like whatever worked for me yesterday to get a bag, if I went to this store and stole, you know, batteries, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, tomorrow I'm going to go back to that store and try to steal some more of them batteries. Now I come into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and because it's acceptance again, I don't want to hear it. I've heard enough of acceptance. I'm an addict. When did it ever get to the point that addicts get enough? But all of a sudden we get into this gift of life, and we've had enough. You know, we've had enough acceptance. We've had enough surrender. We've had enough gratitude. I need to hear that stuff on a daily basis, man, because repetition strengthens and confirms for me and lets me know, you know what I'm saying, that no matter how long I stay in this process of recovery, no matter how long I practice these principles, one thing that will always hold true is that I'll still be an addict. I'll still have the disease of addiction. And the choice is that this program gives me the option of either being in active addiction or my addiction being under arrest. And just for the day, I make an investment on keeping it under arrest. And how do I do that? You know, not by getting in my head that I have arrived and that I got it all and that I understand this program and that I've acquired enough principles, you know what I'm saying? Now I can go walk out there. I no longer have to be among y'all on a consistent basis, you know what I'm saying? Because I know that one of the characteristics of my disease is that it likes to isolate me. It wants to get me over here, you know, because I work 2 jobs today. And I come home from work, and a lot of times I take that shower, and I sit on the side of the bed, and I'm trying to get myself together, and my disease is saying, man, you tired. You ain't got to go tonight. You know what I'm saying? And that's the very night that when I go there, a man walks up to me and says, will you sponsor me? Will you help me? You know what I'm saying? And I truly understand and believe that God didn't bring me through the muck and mire of my act of addiction, you know, for me. He brought me out so that I can help somebody else. You know, and when God walked the plank, he didn't go get the scholars and all that to carry his message to the people. He went amongst the people and plucked somebody out and had them carry the message. And I truly believe that that's what happened to me in my life because, you know, I understand if I got what I really deserved from my act of addiction, I'd be pushing up daisies. You know, and for that, you know, I stand here with an attitude of gratitude because I know that the God of my understanding had a relationship with me way before I had a relationship with him. He was protecting me from hurt, harm, and danger. But, you know, I'm grateful for my process because I went through what I needed to go through to get me to the level of surrender that I'm at today. You know what I'm saying? This was my because I wanted your snack because it was sweet and it would help me move my little thing along. I had it down to a science. You know, the only thing was when I hit the door, whenever they released me, the first thing that met me at the door was my disease. Because while I was sitting behind those walls and talking on the phone to the girl and to my family and whatnot, I ain't doing this no more. I had enough. Oh, my God. I'm going to church in here and I finished up a couple of your packets on, you know, evangelism and this, that, and the other. I think the pastor at the church wants me to stay here and be his disciple. All this good stuff. But when I walk out that door, it was on. First thing that met me was my disease. So I understand that the disease is cunning, baffling, and insidious. I understand that, you know, the steps are in order for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Because I came here so screwed up, man, you know, that the process was important and essential for me, that I do the first, the second, and the third, so forth and so on. I don't deviate from that. I consider the basic text to be my roadmap to continual change in my life. You know, I don't think at no point that I'll arrive and somebody's going to walk up to me and say, it's time for you to put your cap and gown on. You graduated. You're no longer an addict. You're free to move about the country. You know, I don't believe that that's going to happen because I'm going to be an addict from now to the day I die. I just have an option of whether that addict is active or not. You know, I'm truly grateful to the Lower Mountain Highlands Area Narcotics Anonymous for allowing me the opportunity to participate another day in my own personal recovery. I'm grateful for all y'all over here and allowed me to share. And hopefully I said something about the steps that somebody can identify with, because that's what this is about, really. It's about identification. You know, it's about being able to understand that the same situations and circumstances that we all go through in this process, we all go through. But the important thing is that we stay involved in the process. Like I said earlier, Narcotics Anonymous is an action program. You can't sit there waiting for your ship to come in. The action is that you jump in the water and you swim out to meet it. Get a sponsor, get a home group, get involved. You know, personal recovery, you know, depends on, and the process depends on what you do. That's what it's about for me. I'm grateful to this area for allowing me to share, and thank you all for being here. That's all I got.
I'm Bill. I'm still an addict. I would like to introduce the second speaker, Eric from the Thursday Night Kiss group in Johnstown.
America, I'm an addict. First three steps. Now, I don't ever plan on what I'm going to share. It never turns out that way anyways. I got a short message. It's not exciting. It's not funny. You know, if I happen to be funny, it's not planned. So I want to just share about where I'm at today. I've been up here about 4 months in Johnstown area, which is Lower Mountain Highlands. And I'm from Florida, Fort Lauderdale, born and raised. And scary, you know. I don't know a lot of people up here. I left all my friends in Florida, all the people I got clean with, recovered with, went to conventions with, traveled around the country with. So I'm at a place in my recovery I'm not real familiar with, you know, these, the feelings of loss, you know, to the people I grew up in recovery with, you know, the men that showed me the way, the women that showed me the way, and, it's been tough. You know, the first step, when I first hit my first rehab, I knew I was an addict. But the thing was, is I didn't care that I was. You know, I wanted to continue on. And it didn't matter what destruction I caused, what I did. It was all about the drug. And I'd always used as far back as I can remember, you know, little kid. And I was using because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. Wasn't because I wanted to be cool, it's because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. All the destructive behaviors that come with the addiction were there right away. No school, no responsibility, nothing. The only thing I ever did good was sports and getting high. And by the time I was 15, all the sports were over. Basketball, soccer, football, karate, judo, it was gone. All that, and that was the only positive thing in my life at those times. Anyways, like the first step, we talk about admitting we were powerless over our addictions. Well, I admitted it, but it didn't matter. I didn't want to make any change about it. You know, I had a rehab when I was 18, and that's when I had become willing to make a change in my life through NA. So I was introduced to NA in hospitals and institutions. And I stayed clean for about 6 years, and I did everything the way you should do it in NA. You know, you experience the pain, and you go through the pain, and you grow from it. And it makes you a better person and a stronger person, and you deal with the next problem. And after about 6 years, you know, like what Eric's saying about participating and showing up and being a part of the process, I had stopped. You know, I forgot about the first three steps, which we always say is the foundation. And it's the thing that gives us a firm planning in this recovery. And you know, when we go about these steps, the one thing we do is we don't work them by ourselves. We work them with a sponsor. And if you don't know what a sponsor is, we highly suggest you read the sponsorship pamphlet. I'm not going to say read the sponsorship book because I have my own ideas about that book. But the old IP and the new IP on the sponsorship, we highly suggest you read that before you get your sponsor so you know what you're getting into. Because the sponsor is not your banker. It's not your taxi. It's not your mom, it's not your maid, it's not your caretaker. Sponsor is there to work you and guide you through the steps and help you begin a process in this recovery and teach you the NA way. You know, so the first step, I had forgotten about all these principles, and this is why I used after being clean almost 6 years. So I stayed out there 8 years, and I want to talk about the insanity, and it's not just insanity out there. There's insanity in the fellowship too. You know, we go from institution to institution to institution, and we do the same thing over again. Not all of us, but a lot of us, and we always expected something different. Going behind dumpsters, you know. Getting high in our closets, getting high in a bathroom for 2 days. I mean, you know, terrible things, horrible things. I think about it, and it, I don't wish it upon anybody. Anyways, I got clean again, and, right before I got clean, 3 weeks before that, I got run over by a truck. Now, this was while I was waiting to get in this rehab, this institution, and broke my leg in half and tore me up pretty good. Anyways, I went in there and I was totally willing. I knew that it was at the end of my ropes. That's why I was going in for treatment. I wanted to get off the streets. I was sick of living like that, dirty, scrubby, not clean, dirty person, you know. Everything I did was dirty. So I went in there, and same thing, H&I, hospitals and institutions. And the funny thing is that a lot of the people that I had sponsored or had known in the fellowship the years before, they were pretty much all there, you know. And that was the great thing about it, is that I had familiar faces when I came back. So it was a double welcome, you know, back. And I firmly believe in that. You welcome people back when they come back, and you welcome the newcomer. There's two reasons why we come here. One to save our life, one to carry the message. And they're both go hand in hand. You know, you got ulterior motives here. You might last a little while. Eventually, either you're going to change or you're going to go. And that's just the way it is. There's nothing you can do about that. You either change or you go. I've been in this fellowship since the early 80s. I'm only 39 now. I'm a little boy, I think, learning how to be a man. I've been clean since 99. You know, being powerless, I got the step working guy. My sponsor said, get it. And he said, don't pick it up. Don't use it till I say so. And I listened to him. And, you know, a lot of us, we come in here, we're already working a lot of the steps. We're just not working them with a sponsor. Like, I knew I needed to change. It's not that I was working a 10th step or a 9th step or a 6th step or a 7th step, but I had some semblance of knowing that, hey, how am I going to stay clean being an asshole or hanging out with dirty people? You know, we talk about it all the time, the old people, places, and things. So I had known what I was going to do for my first step, you know. We know what the first step is. We admit it, and we accept it in our hearts, and we go on. It's all, like Eric was saying, the honesty, the acceptance, the admittance. Anyways, I worked my first step through the step working guide, our NA step working guide. I didn't use the hardback book. I used the workbook. And the thing that was different about that book than working it before the step was that it was so in-depth. And it was monotonous at times. It was also... it was just descriptive. You had to get inside, which is what we need to do to change, and go about with the process. And, you know, I worked it with my sponsor. That's basically it, man. I worked the first step, admitted I was powerless, talked over it. We talked about it. Didn't take long. Took about an hour or two. We talked about it, bullshitted. We had coffee, and that was it. And he said, you ready to move on to your second step? I said, yeah. And basically did the same thing. We talked about the insanity and coming to believe. Now, see, that goes back to the thing again. What I say was some of us are working some of these steps before we even know it. You know, because I knew there was a God in my life. I was clean, you know. Coming from the streets, no clean underwear, no toothbrush, you know, unkempt person. And here I am, I'm in a rehab, I'm eating full meals. I'm on crutches, broken leg, but I'm alive and I'm clean. Now, I knew the insanity was still with me, but I already knew that I had a higher power. I already knew that I had a God in my life, you know. And it was just about becoming willing to accept that and work on that every day to have him in my life, to change my life. So I did the second step, and same thing, through the step working guide, Narcotics Anonymous, and it was real simple, you know. Not doing the same thing over and over again, you know. Changing the insane behaviors, the wanting to steal, not pay for things, wanting to take the easy way out instead of the going up over the mountain. And becoming a better person over it. So that was the second step. It was real simple for me. Third step goes back because I already knew there was a God. And fully understood him. I want to talk about something. There was a lady here. And this is God in my life. And we went to VRC convention in 88, 89. We went from Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, five of us. And we drove up in a car, and we went to VRC. It was me and Wendy, Bill, Cindy, and Wendy's son. And, man, we had a blast. And you know what's funny is that I went out. I got high after 6 years, stayed out 8 years. I'm almost 9 years clean, and I ain't seen her since she left Florida. I just moved here 4 months ago. Well, I've been in the cafeteria, and I look at her, and I'm like, nah, I know that ain't her. And I looked again. I said, shit, that's a Kentuckiana shirt. I know she's from up in the Ohio area region. And I asked one of her friends that she got up from the table from, and I said, is that Wendy? And they said, yeah, you know her? I said, yeah, from Fort Lauderdale. So here it is, 17, 18, 19 years later, and here I am seeing her here. You know, and her son was all, we always used to hang together. we got kicked out of a convention in Florida, Frickna convention together. That's going back to the insanity. I was doing dirty things. Not that I was a bad person. I was just doing, you know, lighting fireworks off in a hotel room, man. It just... 19 years old, you know. So, got kicked out of that. And I went up... I actually went up to the hotel desk and asked them if I could have my money back. You know, I got to say, it's been an experience coming up to Johnstown and seeing the recovery. The recovery is great. You know, I've enjoyed every bit of it. I went to the regional camp out. I went there by myself, hung with a bunch of people from Uniontown, and had a great time. Didn't know anybody, but, you know, the camaraderie was there. The fellowship that we talk about and the love. You know, I told y'all I don't have a real exciting message. I'm not funny. I'm pretty much about business when I'm up here. You know, NA is the only program I come to. I got one God. I got one disease. This is where I get my meat, my protein, my vitamins. I get everything I need here in this fellowship. You know, I'm not knocking any other fellowship. I'm just saying this is my home. This is where I come. This is where I give my thanks and give it away back to. If you're new here, keep coming back and stick around. Don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. Yeah, I want to talk about one other thing. You know, I was in Atlanta at the World Convention, and you got it. This is we got there on Wednesday, and we drove up a bunch of addicts again, 10 hours from Fort Lauderdale. Man, you got to do that road trip with addicts clean to a convention. You got to do it. You won't like each other on the way back. But on the way up, you'll love each other. And we got there, and it was pretty much dead on Wednesday. And by Thursday, it was ants. It was army ant addicts just everywhere. And I remember going to the meeting Saturday night, which was in the Atlanta, Georgia Dome. And this is a God thing for me. I sat there, and I had a spiritual wake, a couple at that convention. And I watched these people come down this ramp, and it was unbelievable. It wasn't even a football game, man. And it was just addicts and addicts and addicts going around this thing like six stories high. And I finally went down because I was just mesmerized by the sight of it. And I went inside, and I get in there, and I'm looking. I'm like, fuck, AFC champions, the Atlanta Falcons, and we're all addicts in this fucking humongous, where they play football, you know, and I'm just like soaking in, man. I could feel my heart, and I'm the tears, and I know something's coming through me, and I walk down inside there, and I feel this huge rush of cool air on me, just cool me down. And now a lot of people say, oh, that's AC. Yeah, well, the AC is like fucking 100 feet up there. What I believe that was God saying, yeah, I'm here. I'm in here right now. You feel me? That's me. And I've had many, many experiences like that in recovery. And I never had them when I was using. I never had anything like that in my life. But yeah, I want newcomers to stay here and experience that. That's all I got to share. Thank you.